Good morning. Welcome. My name is Raina Wells. I'm Acting Director of Business Affairs and Research at Ontario Media Development Corporation. So glad you could all join us this morning. Ontario Media Development Corporation is an agency of the Government of Ontario. Our mandate is to build Ontario's creative economy, and specifically the book and magazine publishing, film and television, music, and interactive digital media industries. We run our breakfast sessions to bring people together across the industries. The object of the breakfast is collaboration and getting people interested and aware of new ideas. We hope that today's session will spark some ideas for you that you could take back and use in your own businesses, and that you'll make some new contacts and connections. This morning's topic is enhancing the content experience. I'm not going to get into the meat of it. I'm going to leave that for our panel. Our panelists this morning are Penny Caldwell, Aaron Mallory, and Blair Powers. And I want to thank them all for taking the time to be here, for sharing their ideas with us. It's much appreciated. Moderating the panel this morning is my OMDC colleague, Kim Gibson. Kim's title at OMDC is Program Consultant, Interactive Digital Media Industry, and I'm sure that those of you in the IDM industry know her very well. Kim is responsible for designing and managing programs that benefit the interactive digital media industry in Ontario, and she's worked on a number of OMDC programs over the years, most recently the Export Fund and the Interactive Digital Media Fund. I'm very happy to say that in the recent Ontario budget, the government announced the renewal of the Interactive Digital Media Fund with significantly more funding, $6 million this year and $10 million a year beginning next fiscal. Because of that budget announcement, Kim's been even busier than usual the past few weeks, redesigning the program. So Kim, really thank you for taking the time to come out and moderate this morning. I know it wasn't in your schedule, and you didn't expect to be quite so busy a number of months ago when you committed to it, so really appreciate it. Please join me now in welcoming Kim Gibson and our three panelists, Penny Caldwell, Aaron Mallory, and Blair Powers.
Thank you, Raina, and for the record, even if I'd known that the fund was going to be increased and I would have been very busy, I still would have happily come to moderate the panel because I love doing this kind of stuff. So thank you very much for asking me back. And indeed, this is my second time back moderating a panel. I did have the opportunity and the privilege to do one at the last cycle. So I'm assuming there was some positive feedback, so I guess you guys like me. Thank you very much. So we have a great topic today. It's actually something I'm really excited about, enhancing the content experience. So what we're going to do today is we've got a phenomenal panel of experts here, and we're going to walk through, I'm going to ask them to walk through case studies of their specific examples of how their company has moved outside the boundaries of what's expected to enhance the content experience and to add layers to the content that they're already creating in their company. So we'll be investigating some of the strategies and the tools that they used, what they've learned, their best practices, things they do differently, and hopefully there'll be a couple of takeaways for you guys in the audience here today. It is a cross-sector panel, so we have a number of different industries represented here. So while there are differences within all of the industries that OMDC deals with, there are also common themes and ideas, and those are some of the things that we're hoping to tease out today. So before I go forward and I do brief introductions of the folks I have sitting up here to my left, I wanted to first get everybody in the room to identify where they come from. So I'm going to walk through the industries that we deal with, and if you could just raise your hand just to let us know who's in the room. So do we have folks from the music industry here? Great. And magazine folks? Excellent. Book industry? How about film and television? Wow. Okay, so it's a pretty good distribution. And interactive digital media? Very good. And I'm sure, because I did this last time and somebody called me on it, I'm sure there are some people in the room who represent a variety of those industries. So cross-sector, totally understandable and expected. Is there anybody in here who shouldn't be here, who isn't from one of these industries? Because you might be in the wrong place. So with that said, I will do a very quick introduction of our panelists here. So to my immediate left is Penny Caldwell. Penny is the Vice President of Content Strategy and Development for Cottage Life Media. She has worked in the publishing industry for more than 30 years. Ms. Caldwell has been named Editor of the Year by the Canadian Society of Magazine Editors 4 times. Wow. And in 2014, Cottage Life was named Canada's Magazine of the Year by the National Magazine Awards Foundation. And then beside Penny is Erin Mallory. Erin is the manager of the cross-media group with the House of Anansi Press, where she oversees production of both print and e-books. She has over 13 years of experience working with books, magazines, and newspaper. Her experience working with e-books goes way back to 2007. She has spoken about e-books in the state of digital publishing at various publishing conferences and has conducted several webinars and workshops on ebook best practices. And then last but not least is Blair Powers. Blair is a partner and founder of an Emmy Award-winning producer at Sinking Ship Entertainment. He oversees the financial business and funding aspects of all of Sinking Ship's television and digital properties. As well, he leads the interactive division of the company. Blair has produced award-winning interactive companion websites and apps for many Sinking Ship series, including Are We There Yet? World Adventure, This is Daniel Cook, Dino Dan, and Odd Squad. So what we're going to do is I'm going to call each of the panelists up to the podium. They're going to do a brief presentation for you, and then we'll follow that with a few questions and answers in a panel format, and then go to the audience. So first up is Penny. Are you okay?
Good morning, everybody. It's a pleasure to be here. I'm from Cottage Life Media, as Kim said. We're a division of Blue Ant Media. Cottage Life has grown from a magazine that started in 1988 to a company that now crosses many platforms, including consumer shows, a television channel, digital media, a number of different forms, social media. We have a books division, and of course, we have the original magazine, including a Western edition. And what I wanted to talk to you about today is an innovation that we implemented just this year using augmented recognition technology. So if we can go to the first slide. So Blipper is the platform that we use. It's an app, and it unlocks exclusive content from everyday things like the pages of the print magazine. And what we wanted to do with Blipper is we wanted, how many people are familiar with the Blipper technology and augmented reality? Okay, good, a few of you. So basically, what it does is it allows the pages to come to life, the static pages, right from the printed magazine through a device such as an iPad or a mobile phone. And we wanted to, we're always looking for ways to enhance the reader experience or as a portal to all things cottaging to give people another way to consume our content. We wanted to leverage the trend toward multi-screen use. So people are watching the Academy Awards now. They're also tweeting about the Academy Awards. We've got people using multiple devices at the same time. This is something that we could do through the pages of the magazine, too. They're reading their beloved print magazine, and we can also give them the digital experience. And then it expands the Cottage Life brand experience, and it creates new opportunities for advertisers. So our first advertiser with this technology was Keen Shoes, and we were able to blip to a cool video of how they came up with the design for this this unique shoe. So it's easy to blip. This is an ad that we actually had in the magazine. Download the app. It's free to a smartphone or tablet. You look for the pages marked by the blipper icon. You open the app and basically scan the page, and the asset will come up. We've been able to do photo galleries, polls, email, video, and games. Just to give you an example, in the last issue, I actually asked people what they loved most about, what they were looking forward to most this season at the cottage. And I would say in an average issue, I get maybe, you know, maybe 10 or 12 letters per issue. Those of you in print know, you know, there aren't a ton of them with our small circulations. But I have probably more than 70 emails that came through Blipper for people who just were able to reach out to me in the moment. They didn't have to go back to their computers and send me an email, and they didn't have to type in a URL somewhere. They actually could do it right at the moment, and it's working. I'm more engaged with the reader than I ever have been before. The highest engagement is with video and games. At this point, we don't have any games in the magazine, although I am going to show you something fun in a minute. And video, which we've been able to leverage because we also produce video for our television channel. So I will show you a quick little video. This is my editor's note. If you blip my picture, up comes a little video of me talking about Blipper with Colin and Justin, the creative Scottish design duo. So if we could just run the video really quickly.
Colin and Justin, so good to see you.
Good to be seen. Hello there, our beloved editor.
Oh, thank you. Yes, I'm Penny Caldwell, editor of Cottage Life magazine. And I'm with Colin and Justin, and I'm so excited to tell them about something new happening in the magazine. They're going to be able to talk to themselves in the magazine, and the magazine will talk back.
We love that.
Yes.
True and full conversation.
You ready?
How does this work?
Well, it starts with the Blipper app, which
Blipper.
Is a free app, Blipper. It uses image recognition to actually scan the page and download video, all kinds of other fun stuff in the magazine. So.
Okay, that sounds complicated.
Yes.
So let me get this. So it's just it's extra content for free.
There you go.
And you just aim it at the page.
Yeah, aim it at the page. So download the Blipper app, which I have done.
And that's free.
Free.
Well, we're Scottish, Penny, clearly. We like that. Free. No cost. That's our language.
Okay, so this is on your smartphone, so it means you can take it anywhere.
Yes, exactly. So anywhere you're reading the magazine that you have cell phone coverage. We're short
that's
on
incredible.
Time here.
So literally, you've just aimed that.
Can we cut it? Great. Okay. So that just goes on. It's fun. It talks about what we're doing. We do a little demo there. That came from the page of the magazine. So I wanted to show you a couple of fun things just before we run out of time here. I'm going to switch to the iPhone, plug my iPhone into here. And what I'm going to do is take you back to the Blipper app. Okay. So I have launched Blipper on my phone here, and what I'm going to do is I'm going to scan a page. So this was a page of the magazine that talked about canoodling, which is the practice of getting romantic in the canoe. And back in the day, people used to actually go into the canoes to escape chaperones. You know, it was a place that was considered too tippy for the elder people, so young people could kind of get away and have some time together. And we talk about this in this article. And then what we did is we suggested people just blip the canoe on the page. So there it's recognized it. And what's going to come up is some opportunities to hear some music from the time. So if I just click on that, it takes you to a YouTube video, and we can actually hear music from the old time.
Can I canoe you up the river?
Right from the page of the magazine, isn't that fantastic? You can actually see, there's another one here I won't show you, it's got an owl. Here's a good one, this is... So I'm just going to close that. Well, I've got a tiny little phone, so you probably can't see it. But basically, what I did was I blipped this page, which is in our food section, pointed it at a grilled pizza recipe. And we actually had the option to see celebrity Joe Lusted, who talks about making her own oil-infused, infused oil. That's what I'm trying to say. Okay, I'm going to try this one time because the last thing I wanted to show you was the fun I promised you. And I've blipped the cover of the magazine. And you can put yourself on the cover of the magazine. I take a picture of, I'm going to take a picture of these two nice people in the front row here. And they've become Canada's hottest cottagers.
So,
there you go. So that's in a nutshell what we're doing in the magazine. It's lots of fun, and I can show you a little bit about this afterward, give you a little bit more of a demonstration when we can actually look right on the phone. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Penny. I love how you've coined a new verb, blipping, to blip. So thank you very much for that. Erin, I'm going to get you to take the stage next.
Okay, good morning. Welcome. This is my first digital dialogue breakfast, so I'm happy to be here. As Kim said, I'm from House of Anansi Press. We're a literary publisher in Toronto. We are a small, medium-sized Canadian publisher, mostly known for literary fiction. But we, over the last number of years, have developed a number of imprints that specialize in crime fiction, nonfiction. We do a lot of international fiction and nonfiction, some French-Canadian works in translation, short stories, poetry, and we have a sister company called Groundwood Books, which publishes books for children of all ages. We've grown a lot in the last 10 years. I've been at Anansi since 2009, and that's when we started our ebook program. It started off quite slowly doing an ACP conversion project where we sent a whole bunch of hardcover books over to India, and they got scanned, and we got back files. And now we create everything in-house. I do most of the ebook creation myself. And we've taken a few chances with trying some enhanced content. So I'm just going to talk a bit about three projects in particular that we did that used some enhanced content. 2013 was our high point for digital sales. We brought in about 15% of our total revenue was through ebooks. Last year, we saw that drop off to about 10% and feel like that's kind of where things are going to plateau for us. As a company, we are keen to experiment, so we do try some new things. Hasn't really translated into a lot in terms of sales for us, but we've learned a lot, and I think we've definitely promoted some author goodwill and some vendor goodwill, which is always nice in our industry. So I'm just going to chat briefly about three of the projects that we did. So the first one was a book called Northwards, and this was a project that was brought to us. We didn't create the content or come up with the idea, and it's a holistic documentary project about the trip of a lifetime. So Sheila Rogers invited five of her favorite writers to go up to Torngat Mountains National Park to explore how experiences on the land could be transformed into the geography of the imagination. And they were up there for a week, and she had the writers write an original piece during the week that they were up there, and then on the very last day, they all did a presentation of it. And so this resulted in an interactive website, a full-length documentary, a radio program, and we did the ebook version of it. There was some video that they had already shot for the documentary and for interviews, and then they recorded, they did audio recordings of the authors presenting their work on the last day. So we gathered all that up together. And I'm just going to go to the iPad for a sec. Hopefully. Yay. So I'll just give you a very brief example of northwards. And this was the very first book that we ever did only a digital version of. Everything else that we've ever done has been a print book originally, and then we've done some enhanced content. And this was the one, the first that we launched with our Anansi Digital imprint. So, sorry. One of the things that they had done is they'd done a little trailer for the documentary. And so we leveraged some of the iBooks specific code that you can do just to play a video.
And the Canadian North is alive with them. They're the stories of the people who've survived in this ancient land for thousands of years.
So that's just a little bit of the video. And then for each of the writers, for anyone who is looking at this book on an interactive device,
please welcome Joseph Boyden.
They could listen to the piece instead of reading it if they wanted to. And we've got some photos in it as well. So this is our first attempt at doing any kind of interactive content. And I'll just go back to the slides now. This came out in 2012. We released it as a MOBI format, as an EPUB format, both enhanced and an unenhanced version, because at the time, one of our major distributors for the library market is called Overdrive, and they didn't accept any enhanced content. So one of the issues with enhanced content in the book world is, do you make an enhanced content only for a specific device? Do you make it so it'll go across a lot of different vendors? To date, we've sold about 200 units, so it's not a huge return on this. But it was a lot of fun, and we made some great, great partnerships with it. So the next one is called Speeches for Dr. Frankenstein, and this was the first one where we generated all of the content in-house ourselves. And this was a bit like unearthing a lost treasure. Sarah McLaughlin, our president and publisher, was talking with Margaret Atwood one day, and she mentioned that she'd had a handmade art book sitting in her trunk for 40 years that she wanted to bring back to the light of day. And so we actually photographed all of the art. She did it in collaboration with Charles Pachter, who's a local Toronto artist. I'm running out of time, so I'm just gonna quickly show you what that one looks like. This is an iBooks only version that we did because it's a fixed layout book. But the nice thing about it is you can actually set some stuff in. You can choose if you want it to read to you. You can choose to have, we have Margaret Atwood reading all of the poems in the poem cycle. There's audio and video. There's a background soundtrack. So we are trying to leverage some of the more interactive features that the iPad offers. I'll just quickly go back to the slides. This we've sold about 40 copies of. This was our biggest monetary investment that we've done on an enhanced project. It was also done in 2012, and it was available only on the iPad. And I'm just gonna talk very quickly about the last one. We did a collaboration with the ROM last year for their 100th anniversary. And we did a book for them that we did only in the iBooks author format, so it was also only available on the iPad. To date, we've sold about 35 copies. So none of the enhanced content that we're doing is really resulting in any monetary gain, but it is getting our brand out there a little bit more broadly than it would normally. Some final thoughts I'll leave you with. Literary fiction is what we're basically known for, and it's really an immersive reading experience, so it doesn't lend itself terribly well from the reader perspective to a lot of enhancements. There's very inconsistent support across platforms and devices, so it makes it difficult to know what to enhance when. There's a limited market for people who actually want enhanced book content. The cost of creating quality content is a lot. Digital content is terribly undervalued. A lot of people don't want to pay anything, or they want to pay very little for digital books. And as this little GIF is pointing out, there is a severe lack of user knowledge. This woman is putting all of her Kindles on one shelf because she doesn't know that they can hold multiple books. So that is one of the challenges that we face as a book publisher. So I'm gonna leave you with that. Thank you very much.
That little GIF really resonates with me because I think that might be my mom. yes. Blair, your turn.
All right, good morning, everybody. So I'm here to talk today a bit about one of our projects called Dino Dan. But before I do, I wanted to talk about our company and the kind of things we try and do with all of our projects. So the three main tenets that we try and follow is to excite, entertain, and educate. So if I even get one of those today, I'll be very happy. This is also about the content enhancement. So I wanted to start by showing some of the content that we do produce and then that we try to enhance. And when we think of enhancing, we're really talking about the digital space. So I hope this isn't too long. I think it's just a minute, but if it's longer than that, I'll just move on to the next thing. But so this is just a... So yeah, so that's some of the projects we've been working on recently. Let me get to the next slide. There we go. So when we did Dino Dan, we started with a traditional website as part of our digital experience, and that was great, and it did quite well. This was back in 2008 or 2009, so it was a Flash website. We had lots of games. You were digging up dinosaurs. You were putting bone collections together. And then the iPad was released and apps. And so we started building apps. And it was sort of an experiment. We actually did more than four apps, but I want to just quickly do a few of them first, and then we'll get into the AR enhancements. So we started with our first app, which was sort of a Plants vs. Zombies thing, and it was our first one we did, and we weren't really sure how it was going to work, and so it was a lot of experimenting, and I think that's the thing that's exciting about the digital side is each sort of iteration is sort of, you get better at it, and you're experimenting what works and what connects with your audience. Then we did one called Dino Dodge, where we took some of the dinosaur assets and we started bringing them into the apps, because we had all these great assets from all the dinos, so you saw in the trailer earlier, all those dinosaurs are from Dino Dan that we created for the series, so we really wanted to bring them into the user experience when they were not watching the show. And that one did well as also. Then we said, okay, well, what's kind of something really different that's not like other apps? So casting dinosaur bones. So there's no apps about that. So we thought we'd take on the challenge, and we made this really fun game where you're actually casting all the bones and then putting them in the museum, and that was great. But we thought there was still more, and we wanted to get into the AR space. And so augmented reality, like has been alluded to earlier, is a difficult thing to get across what it actually is to viewers. There's a huge range of knowledge on how it works and what it does and what it's supposed to do and the expectations. And so we dove right in, and at first we got really good feedback, because the first AR app we did had a flying dinosaur. So it didn't require a marker. You just had this dinosaur flying through the room, and you could see it, and that did really well. So we thought, okay, that went great. So the next release we did a T-Rex. But the biggest problem was that people weren't familiar with using the marker, and so we got a lot of negative feedback about the dinosaur didn't appear, it wasn't there, where was it, it doesn't work. So then we re-released the app with an update that had a whole walkthrough to calibrate your iPad or your device to make sure that it worked. We still got, it was better, but there was still that feedback, and for us it's really important that our people that are engaging with our brand are really happy with the products that we're releasing. So we then added a feature that basically no matter what you did, there would be a dinosaur on your screen, because really that's what people were interested in. So it was a floating dinosaur. So you had the option, if you wanted to do the marker, you had that option. And if you didn't want to use the marker or didn't understand that whole process or didn't have access to a printer or whatever the situation was, you could still have a dinosaur appear on your screen. And that's sort of, but it literally took us, you know, a couple of years of finally realizing, well, maybe that's just what people want to do. So this is the app here, the DinoCam app. So this is just a video of it because AR showing it is difficult. So we released different apps. So there's a pterodactyl. So this is the calibration thing that helped you. So if you got that symbol, then it works. So then you printed out an AR marker. These dinosaurs are just kind of walking through. You can choose. You can make them roar, stomp, move their tail, eat something, and then you can also take a picture, share it with your friends. So these are. So this was pretty exciting for us. So this is. Okay. So that was DinoCam, and it did very well, but we wanted to reach even more people or make sure that people knew about it. So we came up with, so we partnered with our DVD partner. These are a few of the DVDs. I think we've released maybe 10 now or something. But on the back of the DVDs is a note saying, scan this and watch the Theranosaurus fossil, see it come to life. So we basically took the engine from the original app and we made it a free download. So this is called the Dino Player, and it basically turns the back of your DVD into so you have that dinosaur, but what you can do is you can then have, and I think this is going to happen, yes, there we go, you have both dinosaurs, so each DVD is associated with a single dinosaur, and you can move those around and they can interact with each other. And we're working on a card game right now, so we're pretty excited about that. And that is Dino Player. So I'm just going to... Oh, that is the end. Great, thank you. So that's everything. The downloads have been fantastic. We're at about, I think collectively, we're about 800,000 downloads, which we're really thrilled with. And that's a combination of the ones that are in-app purchases, sales, and the free... Dino Player, and I'll just say that it really did help our DVD distributor because it was DVDs, as you know, aren't the most growing segment, but the rate of uptake in terms of the downloads has been fantastic, so we're really, really thrilled. So thank you so much.
Great. Thank you so much, Blair. Those were all fabulous presentations. We only have time for a couple of questions from me, I think. So I'd like to get into some of the nuts and bolts of this kind of stuff, and it may be difficult to summarize this, but I'm sure this is a burning question on everybody's mind. These all sound like phenomenal projects, but how did you do this? How much did it cost? How long did it take you? So if I could just get you guys very quickly to kind of give a brief kind of overview of the approximate cost, if you can, of what you're talking about, just so everybody has kind of a ballpark and an idea, because these seem like outstanding projects, but they might seem really daunting for people. So can we just maybe go down the panel?
Sure. We have a confidentiality clause with Blipper. We can't say how much we spent on it. It was quite affordable. They gave us an introductory price. We actually used our own editorial team to build the back end. And Generally, the way they charge us is it's a licensing fee to use their servers and their Blip Builder process. They charge one rate for editorial activations, and then they charge a second rate for the advertising activation. They also have a customize option so that if you can't do the build yourself, they'll actually come in and do some pretty super stuff with you. Of course, that's an extra fee. But we've found that it's manageable. A week after our production of our magazines out, we actually do all the blips, build all the blips in that time frame, and we can do it with one person.
So it sounds like you're using a bit of a hybrid model where you're using some in-house resources and the resources of a service provider.
Yeah, exactly. And we're hoping to grow it out to the point that we actually hire somebody to do it for us.
Excellent. And Erin, I noticed one of your slides referenced that one of the projects you were talking about was the first project that you did entirely in-house. So I'm assuming you've done a little bit of both.
Yeah, for the most part, we try and keep any enhancements we're doing in-house just because we can't really afford to do much else. Speeches for Dr. Frankenstein, the Margaret Atwood Charles Pachter book, that was the first one where we actually, other than the authored content that we got, it's the first one we created our own video. We actually spent time interviewing Charles Pachter. We paid to have the artwork photographed. So that was an unusual one. I don't know the exact cost. I'm going to say it was over $5,000 for the creation of it. But we do try and keep as much as we can in-house, and we do keep all of the actual ebook creation, whether it's an iPad specific one or a reflowable EPUB or however we're doing it across formats. Other than one app that we've created, we do keep everything in-house to try and keep the cost down.
Okay, and Blair, I know you guys do almost everything yourself in-house. You have
a
production team
there. Yeah,
we do
in-house. It's hard to always come up with a figure, especially with Dino Dan, because the dinosaurs, we're building those in the TV series. So it kind of skews the cost. But you know, I think I'd just encourage everyone to use the type of assets that you have. Like you guys are doing, and anyone's thinking of it, because that's where your biggest value is, and then you're just enhancing that, so you already have a really great value. So we had about two rounds of funding with Bell Fund and the Shaw Fund, as well as money that we raised through our DVD distributor, contributing towards to it. So, but that was for a lot of different properties, not just a lot of different products, not just the app there. So, I mean, I think app budgets can really range depending on the kind of functionality. So they can be as, from something, anything like $25,000 to $150,000, depending on the kind of things that you're including in it.
Yeah, I mean, the question is really how long is a piece of string? Yeah. So you guys have all talked about your projects and done really great sort of overview of them. And you talked a little bit, some of you talked a little bit about may not have been commercially successful. And some of you probably sounds like there may have been some commercial value from creating the projects. I'm curious for each of you how you've measured your success with these projects. So I think we'll start at this end again. Penny, if you wouldn't mind going first.
We had we looked at our fan engagement rate across our platforms, and we have met that engagement rate in the activations from the magazine. So we feel that it's been successful from that point of view. We've baked in the cost to advertisers. So we're not selling on a cost per thousand right now. Mm-hmm. But I think because the numbers are too low, they're in the several thousands right now in terms of activations. We're hoping to grow that as people get to know the technology. I think people aren't aware that it's there, and that's been one of our big challenges, is to let people know that it's there and that they can actually do this.
Mm-hmm. It sounds like it's also a little theme that I'm hearing coming out from you guys too, is education mm-hmm. is really important, because I think you all sort of talked a little bit about some of the user challenges. And Erin, how do you guys measure your success?
I don't think we went into any of our projects thinking that we would have a monetary success. For us, it's about author goodwill. Vendor goodwill, we've partnered with iBooks for some of the not in terms of creating the books, but in terms of promoting the books, which is good for us. It's hard for publishers to get their content out in front of people when you don't have a big advertising budget. And we found that through digital vendors, what books sell are the books that are on the homepage. Whatever book is being featured, you have a much bigger chance of that book selling than just a book that you have listed under its title or ISBN. So that's been a big part of it. It's also helped us, at the same time that we've been implementing our ebook program, we've been trying to increase our social media presence and engaging with readers and fans and potential readers. And so releasing some of these projects, while it hasn't resulted in a lot of sales, it has resulted in increasing Facebook likes, I don't know what the word is, increasing Twitter engagement, just kind of increasing our brand awareness and our social media presence a little bit has been good as well.
Okay, and Blair, how about you guys?
Numbers are important for us, and also getting the people aware of the brand. So for the ones attached to the DVD that have a simple functionality, those are free, and we've released, there's been a DVD released every quarter since 2010. So we've been, I think there's a lot of them out there, all with dinosaurs, but we think it's important to help with the DVD sales as a really a big enhancement. And then for the paid versions, we've been building out our YouTube channel, so we're averaging, I think we're hitting 700,000 views a week now, and so that's driving the whole brand. And so we're trying to kind of push that into the apps, so that the apps are downloaded regardless of when or how or where the show airs. So to try and build its own sustainable kind of ecosystem of people who are looking for things or about dinosaurs, that they think of Dino Dan, mm-hmm. and they want to learn more. And I think that's also why it's important to tie in with the educational aspect. So, we have the Royal Sea Wild Museum as our official research partner, so that all of our dinosaur information is accurate. And I think that's really important in terms of your brand, to kind of have that longevity and to have that sustained interest and be a resource. So you're actually a resource as much as you are an entertainment.
Yeah. Excellent, great. So at this point, I'd like to see if there are any questions out in the audience for our panelists. Do we have any burning questions?
I'm from the book world, so the noisy part of the book world. So my question is for Aaron. So it's very interesting to hear you point out that adult fiction reading is an immersive process where this maybe doesn't have the biggest uptake. And I wonder if there's any thought about trying this with some of the Groundwood kids' books.
There has been a thought of that. We did, it was Groundwood's 35th anniversary last year, so we actually reissued a number of older picture book titles that we did some professional narration recording for and some kind of additional content. And we released those last year. That was our big Groundwood Enhanced project. And I think our sales are under 10 for each of the books. So as much as Groundwood, I think, has the possibility, especially with some of the picture book stuff, I don't know that we're the publisher who would succeed at that. Our content is a little more literary focused. It's not terribly commercial. And kids' books, we have had, other than the Breadwinner series, we've had very little success selling kids' content online. So enhancing it even further is not really in the cards for us right now.
Hi there. I guess I have the mic, so. My name is Sia, and I'm a freelance social media, TV producer, whatever producer, idea maker, whatever you want to call me. And so, Penny, when you were talking about this incredible thing, recently I had this thought, right? When you see billboard ads and all kinds of stuff all over the internet, you know, what if somebody could swap those out? And I thought, oh, Sia, that's just such a nutty thought, right? Then I got an article sent to me about a company that is swapping out advertising on the internet, and you have no idea that your advertising is being swapped out unless you have a little hawk who's really tracking things. I wonder, do you have any concerns about something like this, that somebody could get in there and mess with your content, and instead of, you know, getting what you're supposed to be getting, you end up getting something entirely different. Like, is there, do you know what I mean? Like,
yes.
There's always seems to be a way that when you try to do something awesome, somebody gets in there somehow. And I'm wondering, did that cross your mind in the creative process? Do you have safety measures in place? I guess that question is for everybody. Mm-hmm. Because when you start opening up technology, it's kind of like leaving your front door unlocked in a way, and especially when you're dealing with children, right? Children's entertainment, I know, 25 mm-hmm. years of that. So I'm just wondering about what kind of executive smart process or what kind of hawkeyeing or what kind of monitoring do you put in place to make sure that your brand and everything is protected? Is it a crazy question? It crosses
no.
my mind.
Sorry. To tell you the truth, I hadn't thought about it until this moment, but it's a good question, and I think we're trusting the servers, you know, with Blipper, that they've got the security in place, that it can't be compromised. Interesting question. Did you have an answer to that? You were, no, okay, yeah.
Does anybody else want to comment on that? No.
No, I mean, I think the, you know, we fully control our apps in the App Store. We're the direct publisher, so I think that makes us feel confident in terms of what we're releasing, and the way the QR codes work is, yeah. I mean, the security is through the app and the app update, and you would have to have something else triggering that, and you'd have to have a totally different app to do anything. So I think in terms of what we're providing, I don't think there's a risk.
Okay, great. And I think we have a question in the back.
I'm John Bessai. I'm a transmedia producer. I have to admit that all of the presentations were fascinating. And I guess it's just this question about value added. And I think I'll just target Aaron, because it seems to me that the projects you showed kind of touched on a lot of the things that the other presenters were kind of working on in particular regions, but you brought in your documentary. We also brought in artists and there's a bunch of things that you were doing. Then you said you didn't make any sales, which your honesty just blows my mind doing that. But then I've been doing some quite intensive research with the library systems, and I'm noticing these digital properties are showing up. I'm getting access to them, but I have to wait if someone else has them.
Yeah.
So if the library has one license, it's an issue. So what if there was just more licenses? What if there were 10 licenses, and that license was actually worth something to you, so you could afford to keep doing this? Because I can tell you, the appetite, I think, is out there for people when they're members of the library, what have you. So I guess what I'm saying is, I think that the ecosystem, I'm just asking everyone, is it sufficient to actually bring to the consumer what they actually need and want? Is it really just about these micro payments? It's just a matter of reorganizing the system so we can actually get access to this cool stuff. A bit the way it's going with Blair, and Blair's seen it's working, the pipeline's working. Penny, it might work. But with Aaron, it's obvious that she's got these great products, but the people want that stuff, but sure, they're not going to be giving them
exactly.
To,
yep.
And the sales actually are pretty good. If those were libraries buying that, then you'd probably be okay.
Yeah, I think that touches on a really good point. The book industry has been very stagnant for a number of years. There hasn't been a lot of innovation. And so when the digital book revolution happened in the last 10 years, publishers have been a little bit slow to catch up. And I think one of the hard things is the library system is we're still very much treading the exact same path we do with print books. We're just doing the same thing with digital. And we haven't quite figured out yet how to give the libraries and the library users what they want while still trying to earn a bit of money on our end. And
it's a money question. How does the money get to the people that need to pay for the license? Right?
The people. So the library system, the way that it works is they have buyers, libraries have buyers, and they look through catalogs of all the different publishers and they decide which books and how many of which books they're going to purchase for whichever locations they have. And so we have to try and get in front of the library people, just like we have to get in front of booksellers to say, hey, this is a really great product, why don't you buy it from us? But it's also because in the print world, the library would only take 5 copies of a book and they'd only put it in their 5 biggest libraries across the country or across the city or however it's organized. And the thinking, we would get paid on each book. And then when that book wore out after 3 or 4 years, because they get used so well, they'd purchase another one. And with the digital world, one of the things we're struggling with is there's only one file and it's never going to wear out. So can we give them more access, but still get them to pay for it?
But why can't your book be $20,000 one time? Or like, I don't get that.
That's a great
question.
No,
but I don't get. But can someone answer that question? Because it seems to me it could be like it, that's what it's worth, right?
Right, but just like. Users don't want to spend $20,000. The library doesn't want to spend $20,000 for a book.
Yeah, I think it comes down to budgets. Yeah. So do we? There's a question over here.
It may be too technical. I'm from Whole Note Magazine, and my question's for Penny, and maybe for you, Kim. The Blipper project. The context is the changes to the Ontario Interactive Digital Media Tax Credit Program. And I'm just wondering whether that was a project which would have been partly fundable under that program previously, and whether you think it would still be with the changes to the rules.
I'll take that question. And I'm going to evade the question with some explanation. So I actually do not work on the tax credit. I am on the other side of the agency. I work on the fund. So I don't have the in-depth knowledge to be able to answer that question. If you are interested in an answer, I would be happy to connect you with my colleagues on the tax credit side of things. So basically, I'm not in a position to answer it, and I don't want to put you on the spot either. So there are changes to the tax credit and changes to the Interactive Digital Media Fund, as Raina mentioned. Those changes, we are still in the process of working through those changes on the fund side. There's a bulletin that's been issued on the tax credit side, and I'm sure the team there would be happy to speak with you if you have specific questions about what would be eligible going forward. And I'm sorry to avoid the question, but I can't answer it. I'm not being coy. And do we have any other questions in the room? I think there was one in the back that I saw a hand go up. No? Actually, you know what? We do need to get you to... sorry, I think there's a question back here.
Peter Miller, media lawyer and chair of Interactive Ontario. Aaron, I was interested in you saying that you thought the level of ebook sales had settled to 10%. I'm wondering whether, A, that's just your experience at Anansi Press, or whether you actually think you're hearing similar testimony from other publishers. And if I can bring Penny into this, because I'm not that familiar with the magazine world, what you're seeing in terms of the level of diversion, if you will, from print magazines to digital magazines.
And sorry, I'm just going to interrupt because I'm getting the cue here to wrap up. So this will be our last question, and it looked like we kind of got to the end of the questions in the audience. And if we could just keep the answers a little on the brief side, that would be fabulous.
Sure, I'll just answer quickly. 10% I think is probably where Anansi's going to stick at, and I think other independent publishers in Canada are seeing a similar kind of plateau.
Yeah, it's very low for magazines too, as many people are aware. We find people are downloading the app, but they're not actually purchasing the magazines within the app. This is one of the things that excited us about our partner with Blipper, is that they didn't have to download the app. They could actually access it for free through the print magazine. It's been frustrating. I would love to know why people aren't consuming digital magazines to a greater extent than they are.
Excellent. Well, I want to thank the panel very much for being here. You guys are truly pioneers and pushing the boundaries and the edges, and it was really exciting to hear what you had to say. Thank you very much on behalf of the audience and the OMBC. It was great to have you here, and thank you guys all very much for joining us this morning.